Blog Talk Radio.
Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time. Discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thanks very much for listening, as we really do appreciate it. We have another fantastic, I think amazing show for you planned today. And remember to check out our website on mainstreammentalhealth.org. Let your friends know, let your family know that we're here, listen to our show, and they can listen to our show on blogtalkradio.com at Mainstream Mental Health. And please follow our social media. Today we're going to look at a couple stories from this past week. One of the stories has a lot to do with cheating on your partner. And it's not talking about infidelity as we normally think of it. It's talking about financially. Now, historically, my experience is, and the research shows that the one of the top reasons, I think it's usually in the top two, that people get divorced is over financial issues. And you know, we have to worry about that. And in this research, it comes out from Fox News, it says that the cheating is the fact that your partner is not financially faithful to you. And it isn't just sex that we can cheat on. This article talks about there's another type of infidelity. It's less talked about. It's harder to spot, yet has the same damaging effect as any other type of betrayal. This is financial infidelity. And according to a Smart About Money survey, the number of people who are financially unfaithful is on the rise. In fact, among those who have ever combined their finances, 2 in 5, roughly 42%, have committed some sort of financial deception. And I've seen this several times. I've got personal friends who have had this issue, and it ended up leading to divorce. And you know, it's become so common. There's even jokes about the guy whose wife lost her or had her credit card stolen over Christmas, and he's telling his friends about it. He didn't call the police until March, and his friends are like, "That's crazy. Why did you wait so long?" And the guy's answer was, "Well, they were spending less money than my wife was." So you know, this is actually becoming mainstream, and people are pretty surprised by it, but I don't think it's something we should really be that surprised about. There's actually research that shows that it's up noticeably from 2 years ago. Ted Beck's the president of National Endowment for Financial Education, and he was asked by Fox News, and he said that when people in relationships are financially unfaithful, it can include things like hiding purchases, hiding bank account statements, taking things from the mail so their partner or spouse does not see it, keeping cash, or even having a credit card the other party doesn't know anything about it. And this definitely is a problem. And if you know anything about relationships, you understand that the biggest part of keeping those relationships together is communicating and not having secrets, because that can destroy the trust that's there. And financial infidelity can be as serious and severe as lying about having a sexual infidelity on the side, having relationship on the side with other people. It is as severe as lying about those other relationships. So lying about income that someone makes, either partner makes, or lying about the amount of debt that somebody actually brings into a relationship when people are getting back together or getting together originally, can all compound all these issues. So we have to ask ourselves, if someone lies to their spouse about finances, does that put them in the same mental state then as someone who physically is cheating on their spouse? And, you know, I think that under certain circumstances, it might. The issue then is, you know, how many secrets have you not told, and how many lies have you told? And that's where I think the trust issue starts going away. The minute you get caught in that, and it snowballs into one lie, into another lie. So we have to start paying attention to this. I think it's significant. Going on to our next story, something that I also see a lot of, because I work in a couple of hospitals, is what happens to somebody after having a heart attack or heart disease, and one of those significant predictors for their death in the first 10 years after having identified with coronary disease. That's not actually having a heart attack, but actually having coronary artery disease is depression. That's the big ticket item for that. And the study is pretty interesting. It's something that I see, like I said, in the hospitals all the time. It came out of Intermountain Medical Center Heart Institute in Salt Lake City, and was presented actually at the 66th Annual Scientific Sessions in Washington, D.C., American College of Cardiology. And it basically says that people who are diagnosed with depression are about twice as likely to die compared to those who are not diagnosed with depression. And I know the simple answer is, well, let's just not diagnose them. But that kind of defeats the purpose. Whether you're diagnosed or not, if you have depression, that's the issue. So the study shows that it doesn't matter if the depression emerges in the short term or a few years down the road, according to Heidi May, PhD, a cardiovascular epidemiologist for Intermountain Medical Center in Salt Lake. She goes on to say that I think the take-home message is that patients with coronary disease need to be continuously screened for depression. And if they're found out to be depressed, they need to receive adequate treatment and continued follow-up. I know that's one of the reasons why I'm at the hospitals I'm at. The doctors have identified that recovery is much better and longer lasting and more efficient when they do have adequate mental health care as these issues come up. We've always understood, and researchers have, how heart disease and depression have had a two-way relationship. The depression can occur after the heart disease, or the depression can actually increase the likelihood of having heart disease. And now we know that depression component can be significant once you've been identified. This has been looking over 25,000 patients and tracking them for over 10 years. This wasn't just, you know, a little short study where they looked at 200 or 300 people. They actually followed this whole population. And if we know about heart disease, we know that it makes up about 7.5% to 10% of our population in general. So this is actually very significant, and something that I think as a psychologist and someone who preaches about helping people with mental health issues, that needs to be discussed more openly, as are many other things that we have here in mainstream mental health radio. So I want to remind you, you're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show, and my name is Dr. John Huber. So if you want to beat depression, quit acting depressed. Experts have actually found that sufferers of mental health improve if they avoid dwelling on negative thoughts. Now, as a therapist, I know oftentimes my patients benefit from me giving them structure. One of the things I'll often do is tell them that, you know, you can't act depressed except for a certain period of time. Give yourself a time every day that you can go and act depressed. And they oftentimes, you know, why should I do that if I'm depressed? And I usually go back to, these are people with children or people they take care of, children or younger adults. And I tell them, you know, you don't want to teach individuals to act depressed all the time. You want to teach them to behave in a happy manner, and not denying your own depression. I want to give you time to go and express that. And what we know from the people around them, they turn out to be less depressed when the people who take care of them aren't always acting in a depressed fashion. So we know it's beneficial to them in that situation. At the same time, though, research has actually shown that this is very beneficial to treatment outcomes when you stop acting depressed and start brooding and stop focusing on depressed symptomology. All right, again, you're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. My name is Dr. John Huber. Today we have a special guest, Julie Michelle McCullough. She's an American model, an actress, stand-up comedian. She was Playboy Playmate of the Month for February 1986. She played a role, the role Julie Costello on the hit TV series Growing Pains. Ms. McCullough is also a high school classmate of mine and the other founders here at Mainstream Mental Health. So it's actually a real pleasure to welcome Ms. McCullough to the program. Julie, glad
Hi
to have
there.
You on.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's our pleasure, definitely. So you've been a model, an actor, a writer, stand-up comedian. Of
a little
all those
bit of
things,
everything.
Yeah, definitely. Of all those things you've done, what do you think has been, for you, just the most fulfilling expression of who you are creatively?
Absolutely being a comedian, stand-up
really?
Comic, hands down, absolutely. Nothing compared to it. I really figured that out more and more just touring around the country and getting to be myself and not having to worry about having an accent, because in film and television, you can't have an accent. So I was always trying to get rid of it, and I was always playing other characters, and being on stage, I get to be myself, and I self-deprecate and talk about a little bit of everything on stage, and it helps me as a person, you know, express what's going on in my own life, you know, such as going through menopause, being an older woman, and, you know, being a single older woman, and because it's quite depressing, and, you know, getting to talk about that and self-deprecate about that has certainly been the most enjoyable part of my life.
So it's all depressing.
Career.
So what about all this talk I hear about being a cougar and how much fun that is? What?
No, I'm not a cougar. I'm a bunny.
Sure,
I keep telling
bunny,
people that.
Right.
I'm a playmate. I'm a bunny. I'm not a cougar. I'm like, you guys got cat names for us. We got all kinds of names for you guys. Some of y'all are dogs. Some of y'all are squirrels. Some of y'all are one-eyed snakes. Some of y'all are
downright
pigs.
They found out that most American men can't get mad cow disease because we're all pigs. So.
But I'm bump. Yeah, I joke about that on stage. I'm like, you can't be calling us
a
freaking
really?
Cougars. They got cat names for us. We got all kinds of. We get a whole barn full of freaking animals with y'all. So don't be calling us cat names.
Well,
there's an old joke,
now,
you know, it's like, you be calling us cat names, then you're going to wind up doing it doggy style, and that's where you sit up and beg, and she just rolls over and plays dead. Don't be calling us cat names. You will find out
yeah,
that sex is just
like
air.
Like
it don't
style.
Matter until you ain't getting any.
Yeah,
and, I think that's a good adage, too. Sex is just like air. It doesn't matter until you ain't getting any. So
that's right. That's right. So
no
do you
cat
think,
names.
I mean, no cat names. But do you think, you know, as a comedian, that you have to have thick skin? I mean, we just, you know, we hear about people like Robin Williams and how his life ended.
I think a lot of people turn to comedy because they don't have thick skin. So it's a form of expression. And I'd say probably more than 50% of the stand-up comedians I meet are very depressed people. And they take it to the opposite extreme where they, you know, try to find humor in life. And to hear that immediate feedback of laughter is a way that they sort of self-medicate in a strange way. But that's a form of self-medication to, you know, to try to find the happiness in your depressed life. And I think I find that with almost all comedians I meet, really, it's more than 50%.
I think it's more than 50%. I mean, there's some comedians I just can't watch because as a clinician, I see all the signs that there's a lot of depression underlying everything they do. And it's painful for me.
Absolutely.
I mean, they may on the surface be funny, but, you know, when you cut through it, in fact, it was, you know, very sad. You know, my wife and I talked about one of the reasons, you know, I love Good Morning Vietnam. But that was probably the only movie I really liked to watch of Robin Williams because I saw the pain he was experiencing through there. And, you know, you can't really tell people, hey, I think that guy's depressed because everybody's laughing and he looks like he's having a good time. But one of the reasons why people take on other roles is to hide from who they really are.
Yeah, and I think there's another old adage that tragedy plus time equals comedy. And that's something that all comedians say, something that all writers will say. And you just try to blockade what's going on in your life by expressing it on stage. And generally, with a lot of comedy and a lot of stand-up comics, there is a lot of truth in what they say, unless somebody else is writing it. If they're writing their own material, it's usually they'll be talking about themselves, unless they're pop culture comedians or political comedians. Usually people talk about themselves. That's what makes them unique and different. And sometimes very funny.
Right. And it reminds me, because I work at a couple hospitals, and the gallows humor, because what we deal with is not pleasant most of the time. And, you know, if you don't find humor in it, you know, you're looking for depression or some kind of alcohol or drug addiction on top of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very little different starting point, but the same place you end up at. So
people either turn to religion, or they turn to drugs, or they turn to alcohol, or they turn into stand-up comedians.
I was going to say clinical psychologist, but stand-up comedian.
Or clinical psychologist. We can all add it to our own careers.
Well,
that's true.
Speaking of religion, I've never talked to you about this before, but, you know, your experience on Growing Pains was something that, you know, while I was watching it, I was mesmerized because I'm like, hey, somebody I know, you know, she's actually out there in the limelight. And your former co-star, you know, didn't see eye to eye, I guess, with his spiritual beliefs and some of your modeling. Did his conduct and his behavior change how you viewed religion?
No, absolutely not. He changed while, or should I say during the course of the show, and we all kind of watched it happen, and he, you know, found his voice with religion, and I think he was just trying to find himself, and he didn't quite know how to deal with that, and basically said that I was bad for his image as a Christian, and he wanted me off the show and refused to re-sign contracts for the show until they had me fired from the show. Basically, they wrote me off. They don't call it firing. They just write you off.
Right.
And so I lost my job over it. And I, you know, part of me understood, you know, but part of me didn't. So I was very upset, very, very depressed at the time over it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but I was also kind of happy to be off that show in such a strange way because I felt with our executive producers, they were not very good with dealing with human beings and such as they would write these jokes about being overweight constantly for one of the stars of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And she wound up becoming completely bulimic. And even after knowing that she was having these issues, they still continued to write jokes about her being overweight. And this really wreaked havoc on this kid. And she's such a nice girl, such a pretty girl, too. And and so I felt bad, you know, for Tracy Gold, what was going on with her. They were also doing the exact same thing to another star of their other TV show, which was called Just the 10 of Us, and they filmed next door to us. And I saw them doing the exact same thing to another girl on that show, and that girl cried on my shoulder so heavily about it. She had lost so much weight. She was shaking, and I was really worried about her really badly at one point. And so the producers just didn't have, they didn't have a tact for young girls. They just didn't, and how to handle them. And for me, one of them walked up to me in my episode where I had the Dear John letter, and I was reading this Dear John letter, on film, and I had just come back from, I had literally just taken a red-eye flight from North Carolina, which is where my family was living at the time and from. My grandfather was dying. He was very, very, very ill with cancer, and they literally took that knowledge and walked up to me, one of the executive producers walked up to me while I'm doing the scene, after I just did my take, and says, "Hey, you know how you feel about your grandfather dying right now? I want you to pretend that he just died, okay? And that's what I want, all right?" And he says this with a big smile, and I'm like, and then walks away. What kind of human does that to another human? So for me, Kirk wanted me off the show. I was at that point, I was really done. I lost my mind over that. Like, how
not very
you?
Christian.
No, none of them. And one of those executive producers that Kirk was all like keen on and everything at the time wound up going to prison for child pornography. They found it all over his computer. They arrested him and he went to prison.
Wow.
I'm not even sure. He may or may not still be in prison. I don't know. I don't want to know. But, I thought, wow, these judgmental people, and here one of them is a complete pedophile. It's just like these are the people that I was dealing with at work. So, in a lot of ways, they did me a favor.
Right, and it didn't sound like
to be able to be off that show.
Yeah, it didn't sound like Kurt was being too much of a Christian either. I mean, Jesus.
He threw boulders. I say that all the time. He threw boulders. Well, and then I saw somebody told me about him preaching one time on TV, and I saw it, and I swear pelicans could have flown in and out of my mouth watching him. My mouth was dropped so open. I was in such shock singing, what he, was like on TV preaching.
Right.
It was just very, very awful to me. I just couldn't even stand watching it. He thinks everyone's going to hell. If you're any other religion besides his way of the master, which is his religious cult that he's into, then he thinks you're going to hell. I'm like, I'm not going to hell. I pray that I don't go to hell. I pray I've never done anything so awful. So it's quite interesting.
Were there other behaviors
that we
talk about?
Somebody is at my door, and I'm so sorry, but somebody is whacking away at my door right now. I don't know if you can even call us this or not, but I'm home for the first time in a long time. There's somebody at my door, and I don't know who it is, and I'm trying to see. I have pest control at my door. See, this is everyday life right now, and I actually cannot continue this because, hold on 1 second.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but can you come back to me in just a few minutes when you're done with some other units? Thank you. I'm just on a phone conversation. Thank you. Yep, there you have it. Never come to me.
I'm sure we can edit that part out.
They come to our, they come once a month, for
calendars
on the building. So sorry. But they kept knocking at my door. I didn't know if you could hear it or not.
No, we couldn't. We couldn't hear it. Can we go back a minute? I mean, you talked about how Kirk changed, as far as his attitudes. Were there visual changes that behaviorally that you could see? During that?
Just basically segregated himself off from everybody, from the cast, from the crew. Really shunned everyone, wouldn't really speak to anyone, basically thought we were all sinners and became a loner. Usually those are signs of either somebody's about to come in with a big gun and start shooting everybody, or they're doing heavy drugs. At first, you know, I just didn't realize what it was. Then he started playing guitar and singing Christian music, and he would just go sit off by himself. And the disassociation, that was the big thing that I saw right up front, was the disassociation. It's kind of strange.
It's one of the benchmark traits of depression, too. So isolation,
that,
withdrawing.
That was the one thing. Yeah, isolation was the one main thing that I saw and noticed immediately.
So
the isolation.
Now let's shift back maybe a little bit more towards you for a few minutes. What would you define as your moral qualities and how that has guided your moral code, so to speak?
Well, I believe because of the posing in a magazine and you pose naked, you show your hooters, your cooter, your pooter, you know, the whole world is out there to see it. And then they, you know, a lot of people either accept you for just who you are as a person or they just judge you and just don't even want to know who you are as a person. So got that immediately, a lot of disdain immediately if they knew that I had posed in the magazine without my clothes. A lot of judgment, a lot of heavy judgment. What it did show me was who people are as human beings. So, because I always carried myself as a decent person. I don't do drugs, never done drugs, never drank alcohol or any of that kind of stuff. So, I never thought of myself, you know, as a bad person, but it's funny how people will just immediately judge you as if you are because of what you have done.
They think that's all of you, that one thing is what makes up Julie. And, you know, of course, we know that's not true. But I've watched some of your stand-up on YouTube, and, you know, I haven't got to see you perform live yet or anything. Hopefully that will change. But I see that in your comedy. You know, I'm not who you think I am because of the self-deprecation that I watch you do. You know, your grandma's story with the cotton, you know. So I think that that's admirable. And it's funny, too. I mean, that helps a lot. But if you could leave one thing with my listeners, you know, about living life and moving forward, what would you try to do tell my listeners? Julie? All right, well, we have lost our connection here. And I was getting ready to ask Julie where we could find out more about her and where her website is, what she has up that way. We'll have to post that on our website and let everybody follow that along. I guess that wraps it up for us today on today's edition of Mainstream Mental Health Radio. I want to thank Julie. I think it was amazing that she came on and actually disclosed a lot of the interactions between her and Mr. Cameron. And I'd like to encourage you all to follow our website at mainstreammentalhealth.org. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you all hopefully this next week. And we'll have another great performance. It'll be a great show. And it'll be pretty hard to beat what we've got here today. But I'd like to thank Julie again. And remember, life is what happens while you're making plans, so don't forget to buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google Plus, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.